John Bolger with Premier Guitar. I'm here with Paul Gilbert of Mr. Big. Paul, thanks for joining us today, man.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, tell me about that crazy guitar. What are you tuned to?
I have, first of all, everything's down a half step.
Okay.
So even, I'm going to call it E, but it's actually D sharp, I guess.
Okay.
But it's three E's. I've got a high E, a middle E, and a low E. And so that way you can stretch out and do an arpeggio, and it's the same frets on each string.
Oh, wow.
And you just go across. And it makes it, and plus the guitar itself is a shorter scale.
Yeah.
So those insane stretches, you know.
Yeah.
You know, that'd be, I mean, it's not a small stretch, but it would be impossible on a normal guitar, but
yeah.
I can get all the way down to the C. And just to make it all the more that more crazy, there's this secret thing that a Boss DD3 pedal will do, which is you play something, and right after you play it, you hit the pedal on, and it takes out, it grabs the last little bit and just loops it.
Cool.
If I go, it just loops it. So if I play something crazy like, you know. And then and it gives me a little time to think in between arpeggios.
Right. Wow, man, that is like superhuman.
Yeah.
That is so cool.
Yeah. And that's the secret of playing fast, to make it easy. If it's not easy, you can't speed it up. So this is really easy to play.
Wow. Okay, that is awesome. Yeah.
I only use it for about a minute during the show, but it's the peak of the shred. So it's worth it to have it on the stand,
yeah,
ready to go.
That is too cool. Okay, so that is awesome. Now, let's talk about this one. This is your number one, your signature.
It is.
How long have you had this signature guitar? Ibanez came out with it like 20 years ago or something like that? I mean, how long ago?
Well, I've been with Ibanez about 30 years now.
Yeah, wow.
This particular one.
You were a kid when you first
came
out.
Oh, I'm still a kid. I'm just a deaf kid. Yeah, this particular model, this exact one has probably been out, I don't know, 2 years.
Hmm.
But the first signature model I ever had came out maybe 89.
Okay, yeah.
So somewhere around there.
Yeah, great. So tell me about this one, the latest incarnation of it.
The latest one is, it's called a Fireman.
Cool.
And it's the opposite of the Iceman.
Right, the
which
Paul
was,
Stanley.
Which looked kind of like that.
Oh, yeah.
But I had them put a cutaway there so I can hit the high notes.
Right.
And it's sort of a guitar of opposites because, you know, normally you've got your volume and tone, but I reversed it.
Oh, cool.
Because, you know, I can't look most of the time because I'm looking at the audience or I'm singing. And
yeah.
So I have to be able to, you know, I'm up here because I just played a big chord.
Yeah.
And then somehow I got to get back down. And so my hand comes around and the first thing that I come to is the volume.
Oh, okay.
And that, I want it to be the first thing I come to from a big Pete Townsend strum.
Sure.
So that's why I have the volume there. The pickups are angled, which gives me a slightly warmer sound on the high strings.
And it's the opposite angle of like a Telecaster.
Yeah, instead of making you deaf immediately, it makes you deaf after, you know,
yeah.
It takes longer. You know,
yeah.
It's just a warmer high end.
Oh, yeah. Killer. And those are DiMarzios, right?
These are DiMarzio Air Classics, I believe, which I love.
Yeah.
The middle one is a DiMarzio, I think it's an Area 67 or something, but I can't remember.
Yeah.
It's just got a thick neck on it, which is just, you know, I found the thick necks tend to have good tone.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds killer. So do you stay on this guitar most of the night?
I do, actually.
Yeah.
I've got some others for other songs, but this one gets the most usage.
Yeah, and this, if you want to get whammy-ish.
Yeah, this is a a new one from the custom shop. And it's got the Ibanez Edge tremolo on it, which it stays in tune perfectly. And of course, you can do the whammy thing.
Yeah.
I'm still sort of gravitating back towards the non-whammy, but it's really fun to just mess around with it sometimes.
Sure.
And we've got a song, a new song called 1992, where I've got a lot of that kind of thing.
Cool.
One of my favorite whammy bar moments, I saw Gary Moore play in the late 80s.
Uh-huh.
And he came out and what was the song? It was one of those like Irish melodies. And he did one of these right in time, and it just sounded great.
Yeah.
So this guitar will do that.
Perfect.
And it's purple.
Yeah. Subtle.
Yeah. These are DiMarzio Air Classics as well, I believe. And this has got an even thicker neck on it.
Oh wow.
Sometimes the custom shop ones, I really kind of go crazy with the neck thickness.
Right.
I've got big hands, so for the production one, I don't want to give anybody too much pain.
Right.
But for me, I'll go for it.
Yeah. Well, in those big stretches, man, I would think that would be tough.
You can still. Well, it's still possible.
Are you superhuman?
I just got these. They grew that way.
Yeah.
But this is a great sounding guitar. I did pretty much the whole last Mr. Big record.
Oh, cool.
Defying Gravity with this guitar.
Awesome. It sounds great. And so you're running into these two Marshalls.
I just won. The other's a spare.
Okay. And what? Tell me about them. What year is it? What model?
Well, it's a brand new one, but it's the. What do they call it? Like a vintage reissue.
Oh, okay.
It's the 1959 SLP, which is basically just the Plexi 100-watt model.
Sure.
And I found just over that the less knobs it has, the better things are going to go.
Right. Yeah.
And I've been plugging into the number two channel, which is a little less bitey than the number one channel. The number one channel, again, the attack is a lot of treble to it, and the number two channel is a little warmer, and then basically if I have no pedals on, it's super clean.
Yeah, I heard it. Sans pedal. So, and let's.
So for example, if I'm playing one of our ballads with a clean sound, I'll turn my distortion pedal off, and I'll turn on a compressor pedal and a chorus pedal and.
Great.
And I get your sparkly.
Yeah,
and
sounds.
And it's super, I can almost do a police song.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
So that way I can get, because that's the thing with the Mr. Big stuff, is there are songs that need that.
Sure.
And then there are songs that need to be, crunchy. And I can get that without having to switch any channels. It's just all, a little bit of pedal dancing and I'm good.
So we put it on Facebook that we're going to interview today, and some fans said, how did you switch from heavy picks to thin picks? Is that true? You switch from heavy
picks? I'm using really thin ones at the moment.
Yeah.
Which is awesome when you've got when you're doing a pick scratch.
Really?
Like
Oh, yeah.
That sounded so good. I gotta do that again. That's just a killer pick scratch.
Yeah.
And of course, that's not all I do all night. But I found that the more that I play, the more I just like to be able to hit it hard.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And when I do that, if I use a really heavy pick, it's going to sort of get caught or bounce off. Where this sort of glides through, so I can hit it hard.
How about when you're doing the really fast stuff? Was that a bit of an adjustment?
It's, I've got this look on my face. But basically, the really fast, you just pick like you normally would. And it's still... works.
Yeah.
I mean, if anything, you've got to pick a little harder.
Huh.
But when you're playing live, you've got this adrenaline.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times, it really helps to absorb the adrenaline.
Sure. Okay, that makes sense.
So, I can still. What's my picking like the?
Yeah.
it's still,
Zow.
It still works okay.
and the scratch.
You try the pick scratch with a heavy one, and it's just not satisfying.
Yeah, that's great. And what gauge strings are you running?
On this guitar, I've got 10s. Uh-huh. At the moment, I'm cheating, and on that guitar, I've got 9s.
Well, it's not really cheating. It's just it's whatever you want.
And it just it really varies from day to day.
Yeah.
Depending on my calluses and
sure.
You know, in a couple of days that'll probably be back to 10s.
Yeah. And what brand do you use?
Ernie Ball.
Okay, Ernie Ball. Okay, so let's see that fourth guitar in your lineup. Ooh.
This is a 12 string. This is actually the oldest guitar of the bunch, made back in, what does it say? Doesn't say, or at least, or my eyes aren't good enough.
Yeah.
I think this was made in the early 90s.
Oh, cool.
And it's a Ibanez PGM 12 string. And I decided to bring this instead of an acoustic.
Oh, cool.
Because an acoustic guitar, I mean, even though we have a great monitor person,
yeah.
You never quite know, you know, when you play direct.
Right.
But this I can run through the amp, so I know it's going to be the same volume as my other stuff. And so this is one of those things where I'll turn the compressor on and... And I can do our big hit, you know?
Right. Awesome. That's killer.
And it's just easier to play. Like, acoustic... And the strings are too big for me. I struggle with that. So actually, the 12 string, it takes some
that's a
muscle
workout.
To get this across as well, but it's a little easier.
Wow, sounds killer. Love it.
Thank you.
Okay, let's hear about this pedal board. What's going? Where's your signal start and end?
Well, it's in order of the signal.
Okay.
But that's not really in the order of importance. And
right.
The order of importance has a lot to do with ergonomic things.
Sure.
And one of the things is I've got a really big foot. So I've got to have them, you know, like the standard MIDI pedal board. I can't even, there's no way I can use it because my foot's too big. So one of the things is I've got my vocal mic, and I want to make sure that my, you know, the main pedal that I use for like solo boosts is just right where my foot is naturally when I'm singing.
Right.
Because if I need to hit it, I can't look.
Yeah.
So that's why, you know, I put these are actually both boost pedals. So I have my mic around here, and then you use one of, you know, either the AC booster or the Kama Sutra.
Oh, cool.
For boosting.
So that, the AC boost, and that's exotic? Yeah, exotic effects. Okay, cool. So that's kind of your number one. Or this, what is this guy?
That's a Kama Sutra by Catalin Bread.
Oh, okay, sure, yeah. I
and
like
it's,
this guy.
It's like the germanium fuzz kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So like the low end on it. It's got that real nasty kind of low end. But I love it on the higher notes because it's got that, it just has more attack on the high string.
Yeah.
So, like, again, with a thin pick, I can really just slap it.
Yeah, cool.
And it's got some meat to it.
Yeah,
cool. Where this one, I'll tend to use for a little more of the shreddy stuff. And this is a little more chunky, for like, it's tighter on the low end.
Sure.
But I should say that the main distortion actually comes from the Mojo Mojo.
Oh.
The TC Electronic. That's just on all the time.
Okay, yeah, cool.
And the only time that it's not on is, again, when I do the clean stuff, and then I'll turn it off, and I'll hit the Boss Compressor.
Yeah.
And then I'll hit the chorus.
Cool.
And the chorus is the Callisto chorus by Catalin Bread as well.
Sure.
And then I've got a delay on the end, which is just on all the time.
Okay.
Oops, sorry.
But it's a pretty subtle delay. It's not.
Yeah, it's just the you know, Van Halen 1 kind of thing.
Yeah.
And speaking
it's
of
Van Halen,
I've got to have my MXR Phase 90. Yeah. That's sort of my cheat box.
Oh, you know, yeah.
Just in case I'm not, the fast leaks aren't quite working.
Yeah.
If I can't quite get it, I'll hit the MXR Phase 90, and it just makes everything okay.
Yeah. You know?
Oh, especially the pick stuff, it just seems to...
Oh.
Well, because that's the thing, when you pick really fast, everything gets uniform.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of has this nice little thing where it takes it somewhere.
Yeah.
So it doesn't feel so robotic.
You know? Yeah, and even those, the sound of the pick has that nice sweep to it, you know, it's that whole Van Halen thing.
And it's orange.
Yeah, right.
And now the other thing I should say, that a new discovery, and this is huge, is O-rings. Notice that there's no tape on any of my knob settings.
Okay, so
I went to the hardware store. I actually took my pedals in a little carry bag, got my man purse and put my pedals in it.
Yeah.
I went to the hardware store, and I took the knobs off and found little rubber O-rings that you put on, and then you squeeze the knob back on, and then you can still turn it.
Wow.
But it's not as loose, so when you hit it, then all the knobs, your knob settings don't get screwed up.
What a great idea. So you dial it in and there you are.
But you got to get, you know, depending on the brand and then the size of the knob, you need different O-rings. So you got to spend some time at the hardware store.
Yeah.
And they're like, you know, well, the one hardware store is like over a dollar each. The other hardware store is 50 cents. So I went to the wrong place first.
Yeah.
And I should also mention the Voodoo Labs Pedal Power Plus, which is just superior to anything. It keeps the board quiet. And I actually have room for another pedal. I had a really cool octave pedal in there for a while, but we're not doing that song in the set yet. So I took it off. Figured just less mistakes to make.
Right. Not using it, it's out. Yeah. Great, man. Well, Paul, thanks so much. Congratulations on everything. You guys are great. Till next time. That's great.
For what it's worth.
Yeah,
it's a comedy show.
Hey, John Bolger here with Billy Sheehan and Mr. Big Billy, man. Great
right,
to
man.
See you again. Yeah.
Good to see you. Thank
Saw you.
You
with the Winery Dogs not long ago. Now
Beautiful.
You're with Mr. Big.
Right on.
Couple killer bands, man.
I'm very lucky.
Now, you started Mr. Big, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it was like right after you left David Lee Roth.
Exactly.
You're like, I'm going into business for myself.
Yeah, and I got lucky. I found three amazing guys.
Amazing guys.
And it's been 30 years.
God, isn't that crazy?
Crazy.
Yeah, crazy. And you've had, if not this exact bass, something very close to this with you this whole ride, right?
Pretty much. I started, when we first started the band, I was still using my P bass, and I had a Yamaha BB3000 that they had made for me. And it's a great bass, but its body shape was a little different, so it was a little wider here, so it felt funny.
Right.
My whole life was on a P bass.
Yeah.
And it felt, you know, when I feel it, it feels right. You
sure.
Know? And I know where the volume knob is at all times. I don't have to look. I can always grab.
Yeah.
It's automatic. So we tried a couple other things, but then we finally came up with this about 89 or 90.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and right away, it was playable.
Yeah.
A lot of times I have to do, no matter what it is, I got to do a lot of tweaking.
Right.
But Yamaha, they got quite an amazing operation in Japan. Their quality control is second to none. And they just made the version one was really cool. The biggest problem I had with the P bass, and it's an odd problem to have, and it's not really a problem of the bass, it's a problem of me and the way I play, is when I do that. Do like a bendy thing, the neck would shift in the socket.
Oh, sure, yeah.
So I'd have to really torque down the screws and jam shims in there to hold it steady on the P bass, because there's a little gap in the screws that go through the wood from the back plate. One of my main concerns was that neck-to-body joint really being solid. So on the version one, they had two little metal pieces, and it was bolted in from the back, and a tongue went way deep underneath the bass here, way on the inside, so it can't move.
Huh.
It's solidly in there. The next version, they made it all wood. There was a metal piece that was attached to the wood. And then on this version, it's all wood again. And now they also have two other holes, which actually reach in, grab the neck. That's how far in the neck goes.
Wow.
Grabs the neck and pulls it into the socket. So it is...
That's not going anywhere.
It ain't going anywhere.
It'll break before it...
It will.
It'll break up here before that moves.
I haven't broken one yet, so the night is young, though.
Yeah, right. Yeah, there's still time.
Yeah.
Great.
So it, and now they're doing a artificial aging of the wood. I actually saw the process. A big block of wood goes into this machine. They hired a bunch of biologists and engineers and spent literally millions of dollars researching wood and the aging process. And it's not just for my bass, though. They do that to their piano boards, acoustic instruments, and all that. Now they're doing it also to the necks. They're aging the necks also, not on this particular bass, but it's quite a process. And I guess the short version is sap crystallizes as it gets older.
Huh.
So now they can do that.
Wow.
Crystallize it so that it's like it's been around for 20 or 30 years.
Wow, that's very cool. Brand new vintage kind of vibe.
Exactly. Huh. So, and they also do the vibration thing where they put the thing on a vibrator, vibrating table to vibrate, to mimic being played for years, which seems to have an effect as well. So
very cool.
So a lot went into it.
Yeah.
And
cool. And your pickups, tell me about these.
Well, these were supposed to be DiMarzios, but unfortunately, they had a production schedule error. We didn't get the DiMarzios in time. So these are Yamahas. Larry's working on a replacement for this
stuff. Yeah, I know you're a long-time DiMarzio guy.
Yeah. Yeah, Larry's a dear friend of mine. I love his stuff.
He's amazing.
Yeah. And I don't ever have to, I can clip almost any input with this bass. It'll clip, and there's no battery in it. It's not active. So it really has a lot of really solid output, which helps. The more you get, me, the better. Now these are an old version of his pickups. I encased in epoxy myself.
Oh, really?
Normally we do it at Yamaha with a special mold in his own right, but I had a whole bunch of older ones laying around, so I threw these on this bass. And they're just basically mushed epoxy and then shaved back down to the size of the pickup, and then they're arched a little bit, because as you notice, this pickup, when it comes up, its edge would hit the A string, and this edge would hit the D string. So I have to chamfer, I think that's the word, take it down a little bit so it doesn't, and then make the rest kind of a little bit more smooth than just sharp edges.
And you did that yourself?
Yeah.
Very cool.
I've done it myself. I do almost all the work on my bass other than refretting.
Yeah.
You know, everything else I can do pretty much, and I have done. But I usually try to avoid it because I do a slop job.
Right.
I'll give the guys at Yamaha, please do this correctly.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I bet they're happy to do it, to take it out of your hands.
They're wonderful, yeah.
Great. Okay, so let's talk about your signal flow. You're going out of here with two wireless.
Yeah, and the two output, if I may bring it up again, it's when I initially did it because I love the sound of the Gibson EBO bass and that giant neck position pickup.
Right.
But I also love the sound of the Fender, and I had a Fender bass, and there was room, a big blank spot here, so I thought, so I wrote to Gibson, got a pickup, chiseled a hole in the thing, put it in there, didn't know how to wire both to one output, so I just, it came with its own already pre-wired volume and tone, and I think there's also, there wasn't a switch. On the EBO and the Rivoli bass, there's a little switch, which is a bright switch. Initially, I didn't have that. When some guy rewired it for me, I noticed, hey, it's brighter. How come? It's supposed to be. Oh, could you put a switch on? I go, that's what that switch was for.
Cool.
So, and the P bass initially had volume and tone. I never used the tone. And then I read somewhere, if you take it off, it's a little hotter. So I did. This actually has a blower switch, which will open it right up and bypass the tone.
Wow.
Not play. I don't notice a huge difference with that. It's just kind of an experimental thing on this bass. I may go back to the other way. So that original dual output, I did it. I didn't use a stereo plug because if you're in Ithaca, New York, and it's 11 o'clock at night in 1974, and you break your stereo cord, you're not going to find another one. But you will find a mono cord.
Sure. Yeah.
So it was just easier that way to maintain. And the stereo cords, because there's extra apparatus in there, they tend to fall apart easier.
Sure.
Just not as solid. So I just used two mono cords out.
Bulletproof.
And if I use just this bass just on anything, I'll just use just this pickup out. And I'll eliminate that, because it's just basically a P bass sound. Mm-hmm. I'll add the extra one through its own amp. And Rickenbacker did the Ricco sound. I wasn't aware of it at the time. All the early Alembic basses were dual output.
Oh.
Each pickup had its own output, all of them.
Cool.
So that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then I read, I hope this is true, John Paul Jones split his jazz pickups into two amps. I think John Entwistle did it also.
Huh.
So it's not an uncommon solution for the idea that in PA you've got woofers and tweeters, you separate sounds out, send them to different transducers. it's going to be a clearer thing. Now, it isn't necessarily that I'm getting a clearer sound, but I am delegating certain frequencies to certain speakers so they don't have to work quite as hard.
Cool. Let's see how this crazy this crazy mess all works.
So without distortion on, I'll turn that. It's a little hashy. There's no low end to it. So it's actually a useless bass tone. But you add the low end. The low alone. And this also has a tone knob. It's super like a. It's like that McCartney neck position.
Right.
What's his name from Jethro Tull? Glenn Cornick.
Huh.
He used the EBO Rivoli bass. Paul Samuel Smith with the Yardbirds.
Right.
That's where I originally got it from because he used it.
In the Allman Brothers too, didn't he have the?
He had the big thing there.
Yeah.
And I used to look at that album going, oh man.
Yeah.
When I got the EBO bass, it was nice, but it seemed small.
Yeah.
Where the P bass was giant. So yeah. I went with the P bass, but still longed for the tone. So I managed to get it. Now we've done a modern version of it here. I've got a whole bunch of old EBO pickups.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I just put a bunch of basses together from all my old parts, including a couple of EBO pickups on there. But this is a little more refined, a little louder, a little more predictable.
Yeah.
As you buy the old EBO pickups, they did different runs of them, and they look different inside, and they probably sound a little different. But
sure.
So it's consistent with that. So that helps a lot with that. You get real clear articulation from the highs, and all your beef comes from the lows. It also came as another thing when I was in a three-piece band for most of my life in the 70s and such. We didn't have keyboard or rhythm guitar. So this actually, especially when you get the distortion on. Oops, sorry. What's doing is it's got the distortion and the clean tone together.
Yeah.
So you still don't lose that fundamental, and you get tons of fundamental from the low pickup there. A very specialized way of playing, and most people would probably hate this, but it in a band, especially without a rhythm guitar or a chordal thing, that extra amount of harmonic content on a single note beefs the thing up, so when the guitar player solos, it doesn't sound like this giant hole just opened up.
Oh, yeah.
And that was the whole idea in the beginning. We would play pretty elaborate arrangements, but we could get away with it. Little keyboard stabs,
yeah.
And little extra parts. Just to prevent having to hire an extra guy and have to split the money four ways instead of three. So
33 and a third each, yeah.
Way there you
better.
Go.
Well, it's cool hearing during soundcheck when you guys are doing Barbara O'Reilly, the Who song.
Yeah.
And Paul's doing the whole kind of keyboard thing, and you came into the big. Right.
And then at the end, I do the solo
huge.
With the little pog on there when it's the.
Right.
Just to do the violin.
Right, the whole violin thing.
Mimic the violin. So.
Yeah. Well, that's cool, man. That's great. Yeah, very cool. So essentially, are you running all four of these amps?
No. One amp does the high, one amp does the low, because they need to be separate. They can't run to the same amp.
Okay.
One 15 for the high, one 15 for the low.
Okay.
I mean, it looks like, oh, God, it's going to be so loud. It's actually only one 15 each for those sounds. I do have the other 15s plugged into the other channel of these, so if I do need a little bit more, I can bring the other speaker up a tiny bit.
Sure.
Like in my solo, if I need to hear it a little bit more or something a little bit, I can bring it in, but they're off. And then the third cabinet is for the pedals, which I can trigger from here if you want. It's just a lot of air gets moved.
Yeah. Oh,
you see
yeah.
that speaker moving is. It's moving a lot. So, especially with the subwoofers under the stage, a lot of time the endings of song, you hit that one note and God, the whole place shakes. And
yeah.
It's a good, and a couple things we need it when I go to the drills, there's no low note, so I'll play the low note on the pedals. Green Fender 60 reminds of them. When I'm playing up high, that little melody thing that I do, so I need the tonality of that underneath that, and a couple other places. In Winery Dogs for Regret, I programmed the piano chords, and the same kind of piano that Rich is using, so I actually, he comes off the piano to solo, and I go to do the piano parts with my feet.
Oh, really?
So it's a Keith McMillan 12-step, and it's, I use it through Main Stage, and I just use Main Stage for the sounds. For it's just like a bunch of synth sounds. I also have Spectrasonic's Atmosphere in there too, which is another broadband, wild, crazy sound of synth. But I don't really use it a lot right now. Potentially it could do anything.
Yeah.
But I'm just kind of using it for endings and a little beef underneath.
Yeah. Cool. And then as far as pedals effects for the bass, you've got a few things, but you're not stepping on them. They're up there and...
Yeah, because I'm usually a set it and forget it.
Yeah.
So off volume.
You've got the Pog that you use, or the for that one little bit there.
Yeah.
And what else do you got?
I also have
your signature pedal, right?
What's really good is the octave bass. Now, I've recorded with this. It's the EBS octave down for bass, and I've recorded with it, and it works really well because usually the octave, the note, is a little shaky and not exactly right, but I've in the studio it has just been super great. So between that, that takes me an octave down. So if I'll do it without it, it's a add the octave down, and then add the pog also for that. So this like a bulldozer. Through butterscotch pudding.
Yeah. Peeling the paint off the stage. Yeah.
But I don't use that a lot, and some people would think it's goofy to not have the pedal board on the floor. They're probably right. But I just was never. My whole life I had rack gear, and I would go over and punch in anything I wanted to. So I'm just used to having it up.
So
plus it's one less thing to trip over.
Right. Now what else is on there? Like what's your signal flowing through?
The main tonality is coming from the, or distortion, whatever, is coming through the orange, the new version of the EBS pedal.
Okay.
In the clean channel of that, I have the old version of the EBS, because in the clean channel, it was very clean. I thought, I wish somebody made a pedal that could add just a little bit of distortion, but still, wait, they do, and it's mine already. How stupid.
Yeah.
So I actually, in the loop of the, because the pedal has loops on the clean side and the distortion side. You can put anything you want in there.
Okay, cool. So two of your SIG pedals.
And then in the loop of this clean sound, I've got one of the BMCs, the big mid control by Exotic. They're really a great pedal. And
cool.
And they run at 18 volts also, which is really great. Much more headroom, much more solid. So in that, I'm just using it as an EQ. It's designed as mid-range, but of course its range, it's pretty much a one channel of parametric EQ.
Yeah.
So it can go from low to high, so it's not only mid. But so I use that to trim a little bit of lows off that clean sound to get it really, because when you add... When you start adding a low frequency to that, it garbles up and you can't hear it. If you use the low frequency from the other pickup and the other amp, it doesn't. So you can still hear the... You get that, and you can't hear what the notes are. So, and I used another one, since there's such a handy little device. On the distortion, you just give a little bit of a peak in one spot where that gets sweet for me.
Yeah.
That's just a little bit of a peak in the range of that distortion. And... the Pog, the octave bass, there's a Rolls crossover. I use that for the, a lot more there. There's an actual bass tone now. I can take it right out of there if I want to. So I usually have it around like 250, 300. Getting all my low end from another source.
Yeah.
So too much of it starts to get too rumbly.
Very cool, man. Now, what gauge strings do you, what strings are you running? What brand
these
gauge?
These are my signature set from Rotosound.
Okay. Because you really bend.
Yeah, well, the low end is a 110. It's larger than normal. Normally, the normal Rotosound round wound are 45, 60, 85, 105. So I make the top one 43, which means the core of the string remains the same, the winding is a little bit smaller. Mm. A standard on the D, which is 65, standard 80, and then I beef up the low E to a 110. That's especially because you did. Want to get that low thing. It won't be right. So floppy.
Yeah.
Because in the old days when I would use the D-tune, you could pull it sharp real easy, and you had to be really careful when you're playing it because you'd be way out of tune. So the 110, and in the studio I've used 120s.
Wow.
But it's funny because on the low frequencies, it was a trade-off because the low strings, it's a trade-off because if it's a larger gauge, you have to tune it tighter so it doesn't flop around. But because it's tighter and not flopping, you can actually lower the action without it hitting the frets more. So it's kind of almost a trade-off.
Yeah.
You could use heavier strings, but you can take them way down because they're not moving as much. You can get them closer to the frets without buzzing. So that's but the Rotosounds, I've been with them for years and years and years, and my fingers are so used to them, and there's a roughness to them. So when you're playing finger style, your fingers catch those fingers, and it's really, it's really an effective way. I played another manufacturer's string one time. When I was still back in Buffalo, somebody sent me a couple boxes of their strings to try them, and they looked great and sounded great. I went on stage. We had to stop the show. And I'd get up because I couldn't.
Oh, really?
My fingers were slipping off them, and I could feel my wrist starting to blow apart. I go, wait, hold on a second, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back. But they're fine strings, I'm sure, but it's just something that I'm used to for me personally, and other finger players might notice that too.
Yeah,
I think Jaco used them, and
cool.
Everybody, so many bass players use Rotosound strings, so. That's pretty much my story.
Easy enough. Well, Billy, thanks so much for joining us, man. Great seeing you back with these guys. That's
great.
Awesome. Yeah.
We're having a wonderful time.
Yeah, how could you not, man?
Yeah, people in the audience have been wonderful to us.
Yeah.
So we're very, very grateful.
Killer. Great.
Excellent.
Well, till next time.
Thank you.
Don't forget to sign up for PG Perks, your all-access pass to exclusive gear giveaways and discounts on PremierGuitar.com.